So, we've been looking through, obviously going through for questions and stuff, and there's been a few that have come in about a bit of a good story about the LDV Vans final, Max.
Was it 05? Was it when 4. Was it? 04, right? 4. Blackpool.
Yeah.
And I didn't go at the Bristol City game. I couldn't believe we'd won that game. It was so bad that season. And we knocked City, didn't we, out of the semi-final? Armand Onnet scored a couple. Yeah. It was utterly ridiculous.
Was it 2002, sorry?
2002.
Yeah, it was 2002. Oh, yeah, it was 2002. Sorry, yeah. 2002, yeah. That's fine. And like, it all blends into one, doesn't it, when it's that long ago. And me and my 15 mates hired an LDV van, to be ironic, to go to the LDV Vans final in an LDV van. And the gearbox broke as we were going over the Welsh border. And we basically were just stood there on the verge, right? And loads of Cambridge fans were going past. And like, for some reason, every time someone beeped, we all fell on the floor. And it just became like this hilarious, obviously, sort of wacky students. We were hilarious in those days. But anyway, we all sort of like, we got towed to Newport. And then we got taxis to the Millennium Stadium. But none of us had any way of getting home. And we...
It's always the sort of thing that you think about after.
So anyway, there's a ridiculous part in the game, right? Which is, they said, now time for the Blackpool anthem. And they have some anthem, the Tangerine Dream or whatever it is. And they all sang it. And they went, now time for the Cambridge anthem. And we're all like, well, they're not going to do Coconuts because you do that when you've won, right? And then suddenly the lyrics to Labby Siffre's Something Inside So Strong came on. And we're all looking around going, what the, where, you know. The higher you build your barriers. And we're like, well, we're not singing this.
To be fair, for those two Wembley games, we recorded one, didn't we? The players. And then the second year was Black and Gold by Sam Sparrow.
Was it? That's not going to get you really going. But
it was like 20 odd thousand Cambridge fans just, okay, let's go.
An acoustic number. But anyway, Labby Siffre, that was weird. But so we lost the game and we were terrible. And then... I had a mate in Cardiff, so I thought, well, I'll just stay at his. And I was just sort of walking back, chatting to someone. And then somebody offered me a lift because they recognised my voice. Not because I'd done any radio or anything, because the week before I'd told the longest joke on the North Terrace, like a really terrible joke about, it's probably really bad taste, I can't remember it. But like, like one of those jokes that goes on forever and ever and ever. And they recognised what I said, told this absolutely terrible joke, and they wanted to abuse, they were like, it was so bad. But anyway, do you want to lift back to Cambridge? So I got a lift back that way. Interesting sub-story to that is I did my cruciate ligament 2 years ago, and what a guy on my football team went, oh, I know this physio is pretty decent. And it's Fred Murray, who was playing left back that day for England. His career was cut short, and now he became QPR's physio. And is an absolute legend. And he was like, can you get me a DVD of that game? He's this crazy Irish guy. And he was like, I tried to get him a DVD like 3 weeks ago. And on Amazon, it says you can order it. And I ordered it. And then it says, this obviously doesn't exist. It's like,
why would anyone produce this?
Even a Blackpool fan doesn't need a DVD of their hammering us. But at least one he scored in that. And we should mention Paul Wallace at some point because...
Yeah.
Total legend.
Well, this is the perfect time, I think.
Yeah, he was at the Abbey on Saturday, wasn't he?
He was.
Yeah.
Big collection of legends.
Not playing.
At the Abbey on Saturday, wasn't there? A Legends Day.
Oh, was there?
Biggest collection of legends they've had for at least a season, they were saying.
Yeah. The ones I recognise was Paul Wallace and Tom Young, so I didn't really know any of that. I didn't see a list of any of the others that were there. But yeah,
Tom Young's a good player. Really interesting. Sad story about his career, isn't there? And his illness. Mm. But he was a great little footballer and didn't really look like a footballer. I remember being on a boat in Australia off the Great Barrier Reef and a Norwegian man coming saying, is Tom Youngs as good in football as he is on Football Manager? I was like, oh, a brilliant question to be asked by a random Norwegian man.
What a perfect question.
Exactly, yeah. I don't know how good he is on Football Manager, but...
So I wanted to ask about your Wikipedia page.
I have nothing to do with my Wikipedia page.
This is a paragraph that I was writing.
Can I just say, at one point on my Wikipedia, I was simultaneously going out with Louis Walsh and a member of the BNP. Which, you know.
Which one's true?
It was tricky. It was tricky to do the two together, you know.
Yeah,
because,
imagine.
Yeah, you know. But I, you know, I got through it and I'm happy to be one of the very few gay racists in the country. Yeah, I know what paragraph you're going to say. So
I'm going to read it out.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Max once suffered from seasickness while travelling by boat from Panama to Colombia. He was sailing with 10 strangers. Shortly after meeting them, he was heading down the steps from the deck to the cabin when he felt a sudden, irrepressible need to vomit.
Mm-hmm.
He turned around to rush up to the deck, smacking his head against the knee of a Frenchman who had been descending behind him. He then proceeded to vomit all over the steps and his co-traveller's feet. He spent the rest of the voyage on deck, dry heaving. At one point, some crew members caught some fish and gutted them on the deck in front of Max, which set him off vomiting again. Max has stated that this harrowing experience was still more enjoyable than watching the 0-0 draw played out by France and Denmark at the 2018 World Cup.
All true. I think there were only 8 people on the boat, and the Frenchman wasn't coming down behind me, he was just sitting there. But yeah, a whole linguine bolognese in front of people I'd never really met.
The Frenchman wasn't Lionel Perez, by any chance.
It wasn't Lionel, no. He was he was bizarre. He was one of the crewmen on this sailing boat. You can sail from Colombia to Panama through these islands called the San Blas Islands. They're totally beautiful, sort of tropical islands. But that French guy, and I don't take drugs and never have, he was so full of cocaine, right? It was bizarre that he was absolutely buzzing at all times, right? But in a tropical storm, he'd be sort of giddy on cocaine, and then you'd think the boat was going to sink, and he'd go downstairs for 20 minutes and come up with like a moussaka he'd just cooked or something totally weird. The whole thing was so surreal. And he broke his foot on one of the islands, and then in a storm the generator fell off onto his foot, and I've never seen anyone in more pain in my whole life. He vomited in pain. I was just happy I wasn't being sick for the rest of the journey. It was
who wrote that paragraph?
I've literally no idea. I think I said it on the pod. On The Guardian, and then someone just stuck it on there.
I don't know, it got me thinking, what's the most boring United game you've ever watched? Is that Cheltenham game?
Yeah, correct, Cheltenham game. But yeah. I mean, there are thousands. There are thousands that I've just expunged from my memory,
yeah.
You know, that I just go... I think away games where you lose are pretty depressing. I remember going to Wickham and losing 3-0 in the opening game of the season. You know, all hope is shattered.
Well, it's this season.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you know, it's just like, oh, God, there you go. Well,
yeah.
Let's just stay up this year. Those kind That's of games hard. Are pretty depressing, yeah. aren't they?
The other thing I wanted to ask about. So, I don't know if a lot of listeners know, but Max hosts Football Weekly.
Yes.
Which is the Guardian podcast, football podcast. Yep. Biggest football podcast in the world.
It is. I haven't been there long enough to decimate the audience enough to make it not the biggest one. But
it's
yeah.
a very, very unique podcast in terms of, like, there's a perfect mix of information and entertainment, which is...
Yeah, I hope so. I think... So James Richardson used to do it. He started his own new one. I think I am keener to go towards nonsense earlier because, you know, football's relentless, isn't it? There's just so much of it. It never stops. And I found with Sky, and obviously they're a long time, and I think they do an amazing job, but they take football, even at Soccer AM, I found some people just seem to taking football not seriously, really seriously, right? There's just, there's so much football... And there's so much football broadcasting that is so earnest, you know, and it's actually, it is just a game, right? It's fun. Like most people support, most teams are not going to win anything this year. So you've got to enjoy it. And for me, the stories around it are better. And I think we get the tone right. Obviously, my football knowledge is good, but the guys around me are just, they just know everything, right? And so I don't think you should fail at that. I think if you, basically, you could do that part by just going, right, Huddersfield, Everton, Philippe, what do you think? Or Barney, what do you think? And they'll give you, or Wilson or Barry or whatever, and they'll give you a brilliant response.
Yeah.
You know?
A lot of it's been mentioned, you and Barry, Glenn Denning, how did you describe him? Grumpy
Irish man. Yeah. I love Barry. So the first time I did The Guardian Football Weekly, I was still at Soccer AM, and I used to cover when Jimbo was skiing or
World's Strongest Man.
Presenting the World's Strongest Man, you know, being... sort of doing links to camera or being held upside down in Botswana by an incredibly strong Finn. And like halfway through the podcast, and I'm thinking, this is The Guardian. This is the first time my parents will be proud of me. You know, this is like my middle-class friends all like this. Barry's just like, Max, do you ever, after a Soccer AM, just get a soccerette and truss her up and chuck her in your boot and take her to a field? And I was just like, what are you... Barry, this is The guy. I just couldn't believe it. Obviously, he was just trying to prop, because at that time he had never met me. And if you do Soccer AM, you are, whatever people think of you, they just think you're, inverted commas, a banter merchant. You know.
Right, yeah.
So he obviously had this image of me being, you know, Mr. Banter, right? It's the worst word that's ever existed. And like, you are guilty by association. When I was trying to buy a flat, literally estate agents would be like, oh, this would be a great pad to have, you know, get all your mates round and watch your, you know, watch that stuff on a projector. I'm like, I just want a normal house. Like, you know, like, you know, just somewhere where I can cook dinner and have some friends round or whatever. Anyway, it was so funny. So because of that, I remember when I got the TalkSport show, I'd done a few pods, and the head of TalkSport rang me and said, look, I'd like you to do Sunday mornings. Who do you want to do it? You know, do you want an ex-pro with you? And I was racking my brains thinking, I'd just like to do something a bit different. And then I just thought Baz would be the perfect, because he's perfect, because he's so laconic. I pray he never listens to this, because I'd never praise him out loud. But like,
I'll be tweeting him straight after this.
Yeah. He's a sidekick, obviously. I'm the main host. But he's perfect in that role, because what you have in radio, those sort of radio double acts, I guess, is, you know, I'm doing the heavy lifting, I'm doing the nuts and bolts, I'm getting us out of there into the news, whatever. I'm working quite hard, and he's doing absolutely bugger all, and then he just comes out with an absolute killer line, just think, you are brilliant.
What's even great, you mentioned it there, like, you both have this sort of pessimism to football. Sort of like friendly pessimism.
Yeah.
It might come with you being a Cambridge United fan and him being a Sunderland fan.
I think so.
Years of pain and blah, blah. We got a lot of questions about Barry.
Okay, yeah, far away. Are these yours or just people sending them in?
These are people's.
Okay.
So, bear with me with this.
He'll be so pleased that he is the subject of the conversation. Yeah, the thing he hates the most. The thing he hates the most is if we're like at a live, if we're out, say we're doing a TalkSport show and someone might, doesn't happen often, but someone might want a photo of me and they hand Barry the camera, and it's just furious.
God, yeah. So Zvonimir Bricalo asks, if you could replace Barry with a fictional character, who would it be and why?
Do they have to play the same role as Barry? Have you ever seen the cartoon Droopy?
No.
Which is he's a really miserable dog with like really droopy ears.
I saw you glance in my direction and quite immediately.
I was just like, is there somebody here over 22? Yeah. He's like a bellboy in a hotel, and he's like, you rang. Yeah. And he's really
I do know what you mean. Yeah. That's good.
The
end of the question is, and why isn't it Alan Partridge?
Because Alan would, you know, Alan and I are too similar. That's the problem. It's like Gerard and Lampard. I was doing the afternoon shows in Hawksby and Jacobs on TalkSport, and we had a Formula One driver on. I don't care for Formula One, to be honest. Mm. And I remember saying, do you ever like zone out mid-race, you know, going around Monaco, you can't overtake it, just start thinking about the shopping or whatever? And Andy looked at me like that was the stupidest question he could ever ask. And anyway, like, it was really funny, because then I kept asking people if they zoned out. And he was just like, oh, you're just an idiot. And then someone sent me an Alan Partridge script in which he is interviewing a Formula One driver and asks, do you ever zone out and think about the shopping? And I was like, oh, God.
Yeah.
That is really humiliating. Maybe I had, but I was just like, if I'm genuinely asking Alan Partridge questions, you know, perhaps time for me to hang up my boots. You know.
Stuart Clark asks, do you feel Barry Glendening is holding your career back?
Yes, 100%. And the sooner I get rid of him, the better. It's interesting. We debate now who's more valuable to the other one. Because obviously, if it wasn't for me, he wouldn't be on TalkSport. But if it wasn't for him, I wouldn't be doing The Guardian. And, you know, they're both quite important. Especially now Sky have fired me. I need the money, you know.
And Andres asked quite bitterly, how did you win Barry over? He seems to have a genuine dislike for you in the first few months. Or do you put it down to bitterness that Jimbo didn't take him on board?
Oh, no. Barry, like Barry rang me before. So Jimbo left a week before the season started. Last season, and I was on holiday, and I got a phone call from Barry going, Max, Jimbo's left. If you don't get this job, you really are useless. And then the head of audio at The Guardian, like, sort of rang me and said, oh, Jimbo can't do the first three shows. Could you just fill in? But obviously, I already knew that he'd gone for the whole season. So for the first time ever, I had a bit of power, and I was like, well, that's weird, because normally I get 6 month notice. And they were like, then they sort of came clean. I said, look, I'll do it all or I won't do it. Because the worst you could do is take over, do eight shows, give them time to find somebody actually good, and then just bin you off. And so, I did last year, and it went all right. And it's fun, isn't it? Podcasts are fun. This is fun, right? It's exactly the same as that. except talking more about my career. It's a bit more self-indulgent.
A bit more about Armandone.
Yeah. I should get Armandone into the next pod.
That would be good.
That would be good.
I suppose that leads us kind of quite nicely, really, just on your career, I suppose. Obviously, Soccer AM was quite a big bit of that.
Yeah.
I mean, what were the highlights?
Highlights? Wow, it's hard to... How many do you want? You want a top three again, like goals? Do you know what? Soccer AM was so weird. Right, it was so weird because I'd done a load of radio, right? So I was at Radio Cambridgeshire for 3 or 4 years. I did everything there. You know, I did a lot of the soccer specials, which were funny because on a Tuesday night, if it went to extra time, George the cleaner still came in and hoovered at 10:15, even if you're on air. He's like, now this is when I hoover. And you're like, I love local radio. There's something beautiful about it.
Yeah.
And like doing, you know, interview, the first time I interviewed John Taylor, that's great. You know, you're like, oh, this is great. And I sort of left sport because I just thought there are so many ex-pros that you're not going to get anywhere in that industry because it's really hard. And I sort of went into trying to do attempted comedy or sort of Radio 1 style stuff. And I had a pilot of Radio 1. I've never been cool, but God. Then I was like, I was in chinos and deck shoes and they must have looked at me and thought, this is not happening, is it? Yeah. And I balls up that pilot and I eventually got to BBC. So I was at BBC London at that time and I was doing the breakfast show and I got booted off it because they sent an email around with like the publicity shots for who was, you know, when, just in case they were going to put your face on a bus, and they obviously weren't. And Paul Ross's name was on the email and he didn't work at BBC London and my name wasn't on the email. I was like, all right, I'll put two and two together. But I was still sort of like a journalist there, so I still had a job. Anyway, I panicked and sent a showreel off to everybody and everyone ignored it except the Travel Channel, who said I was boring. And and Sky Sports rang me. This guy rang me and I had no idea who it was. It was this guy called Vic Wakeling, sadly passed away since. And he was a Geordie man and just went, what are you doing tomorrow? And I was like, oh, I don't know, come in for a chat. And then we talked about Cambridge United for an hour, right? And we talked about Soccer AM, and I was a fan of the week in 2000. So they must have been going, right, box tick, tick. I didn't know they were sacking Andy Goldstein, who did a year after Lovejoy, right? And so we chatted about Cambridge United, I chatted about, basically just did this, but in front of these two guys, this guy Vic and a guy called Andy Melvin, and who'd built Sky Sports from something this big, and we're in a tiny box right now, into like, you know, what Sky Sports is now. And I was like, God, you know, maybe, you know, there's that 10-pin bowling competition or that pool one, you know, like just something to pay the rent. And they rang me 2 months later and said, what are you doing tomorrow? And weirdly, I had a Blue Peter audition, right? I don't know where that had come from. And I was too old for Blue Peter then. I was like 28. I was already graying. You can see I'm totally gray now, but then I was like, and so he was like, can you get in before that? I was like, yeah, sure. And I checked the email in the morning. I was like, it's a weird morning, right? Because I didn't have really much work about 6 weeks before. And, I'd done 2 days of The Late Show at TalkSport. I'd quit the BBC for 2 days at TalkSport because it was a national radio show. It was when James Whale got sacked for saying vote Boris during the election campaign. So I did 6 weeks of people going, where's James, you parasite? And I got the best text I've ever got from Eric in Belfast saying, I don't know who you are, mate, but you've got the personality of a breeze block. And we did 2 hours on what's the worst inanimate object you can be compared to. Because a breeze block isn't even heavy, is it? There's nothing. No. It's just really useful. Yeah. So anyway, I woke up that morning and the Blue Peter audition said, bring in a prop that represents your life. That's a ridiculous question. Like, anyway, years ago, a mate of mine had sent me an anvil because we thought it'd be funny for the postman, right? And so I had an anvil and I put it in my bag and I went to Sky and I remember getting there and sitting down in front of this guy thinking, God, you know, like I'd sort of heard it might be Soccer AM, right? Because I'd had a coffee with the producer of Soccer AM and that had gone all okay. We'd sat for an hour and I was like, this is weird. Like maybe they want a roving reporter or something. I don't know what they want. I'm going to have to do an audition. Like I'm going to have a screen test. I've never done one. I've never really done any telly. And he sat down, he went, I want to talk about Soccer AM. And I went, yep. He went, would you like to do it? And I was like, yes, please. And he said, what other work are you going to do this year? And I said, I'll just do this. I'll make it good. So you give me next year. He went, oh, I'll give you a 2-year deal. Right. And I'm going, is this a swearing podcast?
Or yeah.
I was like, what the fuck is going on here? Right. I was like, this is fucking ridiculous. Right. So he was like, if you get offered this and Blue Peter, what will you do? And I went, well, look, obviously, if, I'd hope you'd just give me £1 million because, you know, if I get offered that. And but I'll do this. And he was like, I hope you said that. And then I think Hull had just won in the playoffs. You know, Dean Windass scored. I think it was that, right? I think, and he talked to me about this game for about half an hour. And I'd watched it. But I was just sitting in that room going, please, I've just got to get out before I say anything. Before I say anything that incriminates me, that makes him realise that I'm totally, this is a joke. Like, this can't be real. I got out of that, right? And my head is, you know, it's just that I've worked really hard and I'd had loads of demos and pilots and all these sort of things at radio stations and stuff, and Capital offered me a show once and it didn't happen. And Kiss called me in, and then I listened to Kiss for half an hour. I thought, I literally can't do this. and then, so like, to get that moment where you've got, I'm right, shit, this is a big deal now. And I loved that show growing up. And then I just sort of started with an agent, and I didn't really know what agents did. And I'm still with that agent now. And I rang him and I went, look, they've got for me a 2-year deal for this. And I didn't want to talk about money because I didn't have a clue. I'd have done it for a pound. And they'll be depressed if they hear that now. And I was like, okay, do I have to go to the Blue Peter audition? He was like, yeah, you have to, you know, because you never know. Until these things are signed, you just don't know. So I went to the Blue Peter audition. Blue Peter auditions are really strange things, right? And it was me, I was 28, and there was like 4 22-year-old blokes and 5 incredibly beautiful 25-year-old girls. And they all had these props representing their lives, like A3 photo montages of their entire lives. Or, you know, like huge, like weird outfits they'd built for the day. And I'm sitting there with a bag and an anvil. I don't want the bloody job. And I'm like, this is totally ridiculous. And so I absolutely nailed that audition because I didn't care. You know, it was from like CBBC. And they were like, well, what do you want to do? And I was like, well, I'm too old to do kids, right? So this is Blue Peter or nothing.
Yeah. Like, well, you want to be careful with your sound bites.
Yes, that's a good point.
Promise you won't.
Yeah. You know, I'm too old to do kids TV. And I'm obviously here for Blue Peter, whatever. And I remember learning the history of Lego. And I remember being given a super soaker to talk about it and just like just basically squirting in this poor girl's face. Once again, you can edit that out. I don't know if she got the job or not. And then my agent said, look, text me and go, look, here's what we're paying you. And I'd never really earned any money in my life. And it wasn't £1 million. It was like a significant wage increase from basically just being able to rent a flat in London. Mm-hmm. And I'm sitting in this Blue Peter room and they're just going, and Sky said, don't tell anybody, right? I was like, okay, I won't tell anybody this. My God, I just had the fucking weirdest day of my whole life, and you know, and I just didn't know what to do. And then I went to the pub with a couple of mates, there were 3 of us, and a mate was getting married, and we were like tasting the beer for his wedding. That was a weird thing you do, like, who cares, no one cares anyway.
Yeah,
so I'm like playing it really cool for about 3 pints, and then I just turned to him, I said, I've just really got to tell you about my day because it's really weird, you know. And then for 2 months I just shat myself because I was so nervous. I like, can't tell you, like, you talk about being nervous for the first time you do a pod or the first time you do a show, I'm sure, like, yeah. The first one you do, you just can't. And I'd had that at Radio Cambridge, that sort of panic, that sort of terror. But like, hell's bells, I went around to her house and just like, you know, can we rehearse? She was like, nah, you'll be fine. I was like, I really haven't done a lot of telly. And she was like, yeah, don't worry about it. And that was great, actually, in a way. And
sorry, hell's bells being
Helen Chamberlain. And I just remember the day before the first show. And I daren't watch that. I mean, I don't have to watch it back, obviously. And, you know, I doubt they have it. And I doubt anyone watches it. But, oh, my God. And I'm so glad Twitter didn't exist that day, because that would have been horrific. Because the only time social media abuse really gets to you is if you know you haven't done a great job, or great is loose. If you're not happy with what you're doing, I'm pretty happy with what I'm doing. Some people will like it, some won't, and that's totally cool. But if you know, wow, that wasn't good, and then you check social media,
and
then you've
got
you go
10 people telling you, yeah, oh,
and the rest, you know, so I'm really pleased. I was really lucky that when it started, and I was really lucky as well that when it started, social media didn't exist either, because Soccer M was like a clip show where something funny happens in League Two. That was the first time you'd see it the next Saturday. But now, it's much harder for them because you've seen it before the game's finished.
Well, yeah, the popularity has gone down. I mean they've just relaunched as a new format as well, haven't they? With Ballard and...
Yeah, last year.
Last year.
Yeah.
Fine.
It's not for me to say if the popularity. Look, the figures are lower. The figures are lower for all TV because young people watch.
That's what I mean.
Young people watch YouTube, right? And that is major TV companies struggle to get their head around it. But listen, Mr. T was on Soccer AM. It's all you need to. The Rock was on. That was cool. Kevin Hart was cool. But Mr. T, right?
Were you on there when Cambridge fans were on there?
I was just about to say that there was one bit you mentioned there about that you don't think they'll have it or no one would want to watch that again. One bit that we've seen quite a lot. Pardon me.
Does it involve Trevor Nelson?
We'll come on to that.
Okay, right.
That's in it. Don't worry too much about that. One thing that we've seen quite a lot is when, you know, you used to have the Lou Publicity stand.
The Cambridge fans are on. I remember scoring in the hole with them.
That's a question that we've had from one of the lads who went on there.
Okay.
Called James Denton.
Hey, James.
He actually scored, I think.
I think he did.
He asked them if it counts as cheating that you scored two of our goals.
Oh, is that right? Absolutely not. No. And look, that was. Do you know what? That's the sort of thing that, in a stupid way, gets you more respect in that Soccer AM office than anything you do broadcasting wise.
Really?
You know, there are some good footballers there. Tube's a ridiculous footballer.
Mm.
Like you wouldn't think it, but yeah, his touch was amazing. Yeah, it's a good football team. Does it count? Yes. And I was pretty chuffed.
In fact, actually, talking of Tubes, didn't a Soccer AM team play at the Abbey?
Yeah, we did. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, I can't remember who we were playing. Cambridge, were we? Yeah, so I must have organised that with Jez or whatever and brought a team up. And I think some people came. I think it raised some money. I'm not sure.
How does that compare to Mr. T?
Playing at the Abbey is great, right? It's great. Honestly, better than Wembley when I played at Wembley as a surface. Yeah. Old Trafford was good. The Abbey was the Abbey's up there. Better than Stamford Bridge, better than Upton Park. I haven't played any other good ones, but yeah, I know.
It's quite a good list. Yeah, it's better than Park.
For someone as shit as me, the Old Trafford one was amazing, right? It was like Soccer Aid, it was like own brand economy Soccer Aid. So like right.
not
Serge
Pizzorno scoring
exactly.
Screamer.
But I was marked. I got there. It was a Saturday, so I got there after Soccer AM, and Joe Royal was the manager, and he was like second half, right up front. Max and Ian Rush, and you're like, okay, this is pretty cool. So it was Man United ex players and celebrities, inverted commas, versus non Man United both. So I was up front with Ian Rush, and it was 0-0 at half time. And I set up Ralph Little for one, who's a very good footballer, very annoying to play on the same pitch with. Nice bloke off it, and is doing great work taking on the Conservatives about the NHS. And set up one for Ugo Ehiog. It was obviously sadly no longer with us. And then they brought on their first choice centre backs, and they brought on Ronnie Johnson and Yap Stam. Holy shit. Yap Stam is so good. I mean, he was only like 37 then. And I'm quite good in the air, right? And all I wanted was a goal kick. And these charity games are played at such a slow pace. And I just wanted to win a flick on against Yap Stam. And I kept asking Dave Besson, who was in goal, to just ping one. And eventually he pinged one. It was the beautiful strike of a football, because all these people are really good at football, and he just struck this ball, and it's landing on my head, and I'm jumping in the air thinking, I'm going to win a flick on against Yap Stam. This is the greatest moment of my whole life. And just as I'm at the top of my jump, literally the ball is like millimetres from the top of my hair, and I'm going to flick it on, and I don't care where it goes. It's just so exciting. The next, like half a second later, my face is in the turf, and Yap Stam has cleared me out and headed the ball back out for a goal kick like 50 yards. You're like, he's really good. I don't think that answered the question, but anyway, it was a rambling, hopefully interesting answer.
Yeah, definitely. Can you name all the United shirts that you sat in front of?
No. Okay, that's a great question.
Because I reckon
Lee McEverley.
Yeah.
Mark Beasley.
Yes.
Josh Coulson. Tom Champion.
Yep.
There's one other that I know.
God. No, don't tell me. Was it a funny dunk? No, was there a funny one?
It's that. It's. I mean,
there was someone. No, there was one that it was a funny. It was like a rude word, right? There was one that was definitely rude.
I don't think that's the United. The only. Well, maybe there's another one that I. The only one I can think of is Tom Shaw.
Yeah,
number six.
Do you know what? I can't even remember him.
Well, there we go.
Sorry, Tom.
I'm sure someone correct me, but
we had someone. And Helen had a tea, and if put them together, it would have been really dodgy, like a really dodgy, like
maybe not Cunnington. No.
Come on, there must have been a Cambridge United player with a rude surname.
I can't think of it.
Oh, come on. There must be.
What sort of period are we talking
about? I mean, the glory years of Soccer AM, 08 to 15. That's what I call them. No one else does. But there must be one. And it was
I've got a massive list of players, right, from that era who scored.
Well, you brought it with you? Just
well, I was doing a lot of prep podcast before the...
I don't mind if you edit. I think the pain of us all this, because the thing is, like, who listens to this? Bony Friday Cambridge fans, right? They'll be screaming at us right now.
Unless I've
made it up, unless there wasn't one with a rude word. But there was one. It was cool, you know. I don't know what it was.
I know. I've got it. It was Michael Gash.
That's it.
Michael Gash.
Oh, my God. I'm such a schoolboy, though. No matter, cause there's something inside so strong. I know that I can make it. Though you're doing me wrong, so wrong. You thought that my pride was gone. Oh no, something inside so strong. I remember once going to a Peterborough game, and this bloke, he was horrible, stopped me and my friend Clive, we must have been 11, cycling to the ground, and he grabbed our bikes and he went, "Where's the fucking fight happening?" And Clive just turned and went, "Oh, we're just going to Sainsbury's." I went, "Oh, sorry, lads. We're in Cambridge, full Cambridge colours." Wow. Like, complete idiot. I went to their playoff final against Doncaster, I think, or Darla, I can't remember, some mates who were from up there, and I wore a Cambridge shirt under a coat, and the Borough fans were so horrible. I mean, obviously some fans are nice and some aren't, but they were so horrible. I saw one Borough fan nick a flag off a kid and break it in half, and I thought, wow, that is the nastiest thing I've ever seen.
Horrible.
And so I thought, I better just keep this coat zipped up for this game. Anyway,
Tim Martin says, if you were a food item, what would you be?
A carrot.
Oh, he had super noodles in a sweepstake.
Fair enough.
What sort of sweepstake?
I was just going around. Is that like an office thing?
No,
is it?
What food is? Why carrot?
I don't know. I thought it was quick fire.
Oh right.
I don't think I'd be asked for details.
Graham Moore. This is a bit of a low blow actually from Graham. He said, "Can I ask Tim Lovejoy a question instead?"
Yeah, you can ask Tim whatever you like.
Fine, a bit Sunday brunch, I guess.
Yeah.
Good stuff. Good
Cheers,
stuff.
Graham.
But it's, you know, I've only met him twice. He seems all right. Well, you know.
At Shakes No More, do you think you were a success standing in for Paul Hawksby?
He said, "I didn't." Yeah, saw that. Listen, it's only because Andy requests for me to be there. I love doing that show with Andy. I've done it with Paul. That doesn't work because that's like Lampard and Gerrard, or you know, Gerrard and Catamol. Paul Hawksby's quite talented, isn't he?
Is the Salisbury Arms still your favourite Cambridge pub?
It is. However,
that was Matt Dan.
That pizza oven. They didn't ask me about that. You know.
Ooh.
I don't want the pizza oven in there.
It's good pizza.
Oh, it's good pizza.
Well, it might be good pizza, but back in the day, it was a bit more spit and sawdust. Right. The back room, that's where we go. The back room.
It's barely even a back room anymore.
I know.
Just a back annex.
That's where we used to go. So sixth form, the route was the Salisbury. Then we'd go to the Cambridge Arms when we were really young because they're the only people that let you in. Then we were Granter. And then we'd try and get in the Eagle, but you'd have to be with Nick. Remember Nick from, if you don't edit that out, because he had sideburns. And you'd have to try and lose Clive and Ollie on the way because they were both quite young. And then when you got really strong, you'd try and get in the Anchor past the really big bouncers. And you know, you'd be like, good evening. And that was my pub. There were our pubs of choice. Didn't really go down to the Quayside. We weren't quite cool enough for that. Yeah.
James PW, sort of following on from stuff we talked about, is there anyone past or is there anyone past or present at the club that you're still kind of close with, in contact with?
So not really. If I see Dion, I'll hug him and won't let go until it's awkward. I do the same with Ian Wright, as it happens, who's a total legend. I did Josh Coulson's testimonial dinner. I hosted that because he's a really nice guy. I spoke to Jez a lot. I'm not close enough to the club to know what happened. I don't know if that's a, you know, and I know, and Dano, interestingly, was the first ever person to put me on the radio. He had a Saturday morning show on Radio Cambridge, and I used to do little sketches for him. Like, it's totally random.
He's coming on the pod soon.
Is he?
Yeah.
And how's that? Because there's some there's some sort of...
Yeah, there's a...
There's conflict, right?
It's the middle, well, yeah.
He needs to answer some questions.
Well, okay, because look, from what I know, right, he is an incredibly genuine, incredibly nice human being. And I've... All the dealings I've had with him have been brilliant. Whether that qualifies him to run a football club, I don't know. I mean, I don't know. But you can only judge people as you meet them, right?
Of course.
Yeah.
And every time I met Jez and every time I've met Dano, they've been first class with me. And so, you know, and also, I don't come enough to know what's going on the pitch or off the pitch to have an educated perspective. But
well, this is all a can of worms.
Good for him that he's coming on. You know, they don't have to, and it's a good thing to do.
Hang on, David Starsky. As they both went in off the bar, is Yeboah versus Liverpool better than versus Wimbledon?
I just don't believe the Wimbledon one went in off the bar.
The Liverpool one is better, by the way.
The Liverpool one's better, and it goes straight off the bar and then goes straight into the roof of the net. You know, I think the Wimbledon one just goes into the sort of stanchion but doesn't hit the bar. And I might be wrong, and I must have watched this goal maybe 500 times, if not more. But the Liverpool goal is better.
Karova says, how's the former future Mrs. Russian doing?
She's doing very well. Yeah. She's always the future. She always was the future Mrs. Russian until we got married. Now I guess she's the current Mrs. Russian. But as someone on the pod said, if you call her the current Mrs. Russian, it sounds very much like...
You're planning ahead.
Well, it'll all go wrong soon and Big Sam will come in. I like Big Sam, but I don't want to marry him.
No.
I think we should do Football Jenga.
Yeah.
All right, great.
Ryan Johnson asks, do you think Football Jenga is better than Ian Culverhouse, which we'll address after we've tried Football Jenga. Okay. And I say tried because it fills me with dread every time I have to do this part of the show. Right, I've selected a few different games to try and go for. Usually, we try and steer clear of Cambridge United, and I've done that again here.
Okay, good.
So...
Good.
Don't want to be embarrassed.
The first of my selections are...
What's the order? And is there a time limit?
You're always guest. First. No time limit, but it's too long.
Okay, fine.
Don't take the piss, basically.
Just to go over the rules again very quickly. Jack's going to say a game. We have to go around, Max, Tom and me, and say one of the players we played or came off the bench in that game. If you repeat someone else's, you're out. If you get one wrong.
All right, is it just one game, one player each, then we move to the next game?
No,
you just keep going.
The same game until
we're out.
And if you get one wrong, no repeats. If you repeat it, you're out.
Yeah, understood.
And if you name an unused sub, you're out. And bearing in mind, I have every game ever to choose from, so this is really hard, all right? So the example I think we used on the first ever one was Liverpool-West Ham in that FA Cup final.
The Gerrard final. Okay.
The Gerrard final.
Right, okay.
And I think the final that preceded that, which filled me with the most joy... as a non-Liverpool fan, a Liverpool game I've ever had, is in Istanbul.
Okay.
When Liverpool played AC Milan, it finished 3-3. We're in 2005 here, gents, so you two regular pod chumps on my right were young.
Yeah.
Yeah, very young at this point. Max, you were a lot younger and in a lot different position now. And, you know, I feel like this is a happy medium.
Istanbul, 2005.
Oh, yep, I'll go with that.
Are you writing down? You're not allowed to write.
I haven't got a pen.
You can write yourself.
You can write yourself if you want to do some jotting.
Okay. I'll play this by ear.
Okay. Am I starting?
Yeah.
Should we have a moment?
Yes. Have a little moment.
No moment. Steven.
No moments.
Oh, God.
Steven Gerrard.
Bloody hell. Yeah, I think he did play.
Xabi Alonso.
Yep.
Dida.
Good shout.
Jerzy Dudek.
Very good.
Vladimir Smica.
Yep.
Andrea Pirlo.
Yep.
Didi Haman.
Very good.
Maldini.
Very good.
Kaká.
Very good indeed.
Harry Kewell.
He did indeed.
Milan Baroš.
Good shout, Tom.
Jamie Carragher.
Yep.
Steve Finnan.
Oh, great shout.
That is a good shout. Cafu?
Yeah.
Clarence Seedorf?
Yeah, he was there.
That is a good shout.
Okay. I really thought I'd have it. I thought that would be enough now.
Bloody hell, my heart's beating about a million miles an hour.
I've got an out there shout next.
I've got two.
Gonna have to press
Risa?
You. Yep.
This is really out there.
Go on then.
Jibril Cisse?
Took a penalty, didn't he?
Never gets this far usually. He's great.
Gattuso.
Yeah.
That's a great job.
Sammy Hippier.
He was there.
This is a test.
It's a brilliant game, this.
Yeah.
This can't be right. Cinema Pongal.
No. Sorry, mate.
Crazy shout.
Would have been a crazy shout.
I'm gone.
Right, gone. Tom's out. It's between Julian and Max. Julian, you're next.
Shevchenko.
Yeah.
Oh, God, yeah. Well done.
Lewis
Garcia.
He was there, yeah.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
I think you missed the really obvious one.
Yeah, we've only got...
Can we have an update of players left?
No.
Players left? That's the game, mate.
No.
Pippo Inzaghi.
Right. No, Inzaghi didn't play.
Yes.
Right, so, Max, we need a correct answer.
Do I need one?
Yeah, you need a correct answer. I'm back in.
Now, there's a great story about a player who was taken off at half-time, right? And he was in the shower, right? And then he had to put his kit back on because her man came on at half-time and basically turned the game around.
I know who that is.
And I can't fucking...
I know who that is.
...remember who it is. It is a really random one, isn't it?
It's really random.
I'm going to say... Jimmy Traore.
Oh my God, that's exactly who I had. Look at it, it's written there. And I didn't have the faith to go for it.
You've done this in the little
We have never had
well.
A better ending to who, Football Jenga
sorry,
than that.
Who's the Italian striker?
Crespo.
See, yeah.
That's what I was thinking of.
So, the players you missed, which weren't many, you missed out Yapstam, which was interesting. Nesta. Yeah. You missed out Crespo. You missed out... And the three subs that came on for Milan were Rui Costa, Serginho and John Dahl Thomason.
Great game.
Yeah.
Well done, lads. That
was a really successful Football Jenga, which isn't usually. And, I'm just so happy that my choice wasn't the worst choice ever.
That was a brilliant choice.
Listen, it's been an emotional Under the Abbey Stand podcast. Tom Walker, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Julian Roberts, thank you.
Thanks again.
And Max Rushton, thanks so much for coming in and joining us.
Pleasure.
Welcome anytime.
Thank you.
Until the next time, thank you.